It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Daytona International Speedway, we love our country, and it's truly an honor to be with all of you at the Great American Race. Gentlemen, start your engines.
All right, and that was the way the race tried to start yesterday, the Daytona 500, but it had to be stopped because of weather, and they're supposed to run it again today. But President Trump and Melania were there. Did you see the pictures of Air Force One? It looked like it was right next to the stands. You know, the photos look that way. As I understand it, the airport's right across the street, so it was just so close. So they got to see Air Force One holding the president flying around the stands. You know, I just have to say, when I was young and living in Berlin, Germany, I happened to be in Munich. I don't remember why. I don't remember why, but Frankfurt. I think it was in Frankfurt. And I looked out at the airport, and there was Air Force Two. Henry Kissinger used to come a lot during those days, and it was his plane, but it looks just like Air Force One. And that, I don't know if you've ever seen it in person, but oh my goodness, it is just so gorgeous. That baby blue with the seal, the presidency seal, the vice president's seal, whichever seal they use, is just beautiful. And when you are so far away from home as I was and young, it thrilled me. So when I saw the pictures of Air Force One flying over the bleachers, I just I could relate to the thrill that it brought because of what it represents, not because of the particular man inside. I wasn't, you know, like my heart didn't beat fast because Henry Kissinger was in Frankfurt. It was exciting, and it reminds me of other stories I could tell you at some point, but I actually met Henry Kissinger in the airport in D.C. one day not too many years ago, and he's just so little, and he's just so very old now. I thought he used to be like the leader of the free world just about. He wasn't president, but he was close to the top in terms of what was happening. It's funny because people hold positions, you know, for a time, but it's not reality. That's not who any of us are. What we do, our career, our name recognition, our moment in the sun, whatever it is we're doing that's important, even if you're not well-known, you know, nothing lasts. And really what we do is really not who we are. Who we are is much deeper than that. And I just think it's important to remind that. And people in Washington especially need to know that. But all that to say, it's not about Donald Trump being on the airplane. It's about the majesty of the beautiful country that we have the privilege of living in. And that's a symbol of it. So then the president and Melania rode the beast, that 22,000-pound limo that is, you know, made safe for them as far as they possibly can. They rode it, took a lap around the Daytona 500, so it was kind of fun. And then the president said, this is not his complete speech, but I wanted you to hear it in part, at least what he said to the crowd of, I think, about 100,000, something like that. This is President Trump yesterday at the Daytona 500.
My fellow race fans, there is no greater thrill than to join you at the World Center of Racing for the 62nd Daytona 500. So exciting. The Daytona 500 is a legendary display of roaring engines, soaring spirits, and the American skill, speed, and power that we've been hearing about for so many years. The tens of thousands of patriots here today have come for the fast cars and the world-class motorsports. But NASCAR fans never forget that no matter who wins the race, what matters most is God, family, and country.
You know, I'm going to interrupt his clip, but he says a lot more beautiful things. He acknowledges Gold Star families that are there, veterans, in a very personal way. And then he ends by saying, God bless America. It was beautiful, you know, just the moment of just elevating our spirits and pointing our it's not about him. It wasn't about him in that speech. And so it was about the celebration of this country, which is what I think they were doing yesterday and probably will do again today in Daytona. You know, you wonder if people, you know, had to go back home, if there'll be less people in the stands today or how that's going to play out. But I'm sure we'll find out as we listen to the news today. Well, in the aftermath of the president's acquittal, you know, where there was a big celebration at noon in the White House last week. And it was, you know, he was just, it was very personal. It was a small gathering. And he talked about what it meant to him to be acquitted. And maybe some people thought, you know, that things were passed, you know, that we would be getting past this. But, of course, not so. In the aftermath of that, Nancy Pelosi, who just, what, was it just been a week ago tomorrow that the State of the Union address, man, do these weeks seem packed? Do the weeks seem like months or years to you? They do to me sometimes. But Nancy Pelosi, you know, tore up that speech a week ago tomorrow. She was asked about that on CNN over the weekend, and let's hear what she said, clip 7.
Are you giving a signal that the Democrats will fight back hard, that you will not be constrained by what you believe to be insurgent behavior on the other side, and that this is, you know, a time to go mano a mano?
Well, let me say this. I had no intention of doing that when we went to the State of the Union. In fact, it was well into the past the first third of it. Now, I'm a speed reader, so I was reading ahead. I knew what was there. And it got past like about a third of it, and I thought, this is terrible. And I made an itch in a couple pages thinking, I ought to remember what's on this page, on this page. And then I realized that almost every page had something in it that was objectionable. So it wasn't a planned thing, but it was... one of my disappointments is the fact that with all that we have done legislatively, whether it's equal pay for equal work, raising the minimum wage, gun violence protection, issues that relate to our children, the list goes on, climate action now, we have very little press on it. And it seems that if you want to get press, you have to get attention. So I thought, well, let's get attention on the fact that what he said here today was not true. Now, I'm departing from my offshore, not criticizing the president offshore, but when you ask about the, I'm not talking about him personally, I'm just talking about his State of the Union address.
Yes, of course. It's just such a person of dignity, Nancy Pelosi. And of course, she's lying to, Christiana Amanpour. That's the person who was interviewing her on CNN. She said it wasn't a planned thing. It wasn't a planned thing. And then as an aside, you may or may not have caught that she said, I just, you know, I saw... I'm a speed reader, and I would see things, you know, about what he would say that would be just so bad, and so I would, you know, tear a niche, you know, was just to mark that page. And the reason she dropped that in is because people who were watching closely, in retrospect, realized that she tore the ends of a group of pages systematically so that when it came time for the big grip, the pages would actually tear. So she's lying and covering herself. And, of course, she's just so pleasant about it all. Well, no, I that wasn't a planned thing. And then she goes on to tell Christiana Amanpour that the press, you know, if you don't make sort of a scene like that, the press doesn't cover it. But, of course, she just thought of that while she was talking to Christiana. She didn't really think about it before the speech because it wasn't a planned thing. Really? Really? So that's the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, and all of her pleasantries with Christiana Amanpour. And then Mitt Romney went to Munich, and he was at a conference. And I just, you know, many of us here are not fans and are not crazy about what he did to the president and voting to impeach. But Munich had a different response. Let's listen.
He co-founded Bain Capital early in his career. He was governor of Massachusetts early in his career. He was the person who organized the Salt Lake Winter Olympics, one of the most successful. He was a Republican nominee in 2012. He's got a doctorate in law from Harvard, so another doctorate here. He has 24 grandchildren. I don't know how you remember their names, but I'm told that you encourage them to call you Ike because of Dwight Eisenhower, and he's probably the most courageous lawmaker we have in the United States.
You know, I would have to say that in spite of all that introduction, that was a pretty tepid clapping, wasn't it? The Germans are known for vigorous clapping. I should know. I remember being at the opera with them, and they, bravo, bravo. I mean, they're like, they're not like polite clappers. So that was pretty funny. So I'm going to contradict my own little analogy here. He's, of course, getting praise in Germany. But Germany, honestly, I could go into Romney's past. I would remind you that he was, you know, heralded for running the Salt Lake Olympics. But I know that he banned the Boy Scouts for the first time in American history. Well, since they started back in the 1800s, as I recall. I'm not sure if that's right, or the early 1900s. But as long as they've been participating in the Olympics as helpers, with it playing an official role, it was the first time they'd ever been banned, and when it was because they would not allow gay scouts. That's what Mitt Romney did. So that was his big accomplishment in the Salt Lake City Olympics. And then, of course, they said he had his doctorate in law from Harvard. It reminded me of the encounter I told you about last week in great detail. I'm not going to go through that, but just when he got mad at me and said, I have a law degree from Harvard University. So I just, anyway, but so he's praised in Germany. So I have this, all these memories of Germany when I lived there. And also because I'm not an expert in Germany or German politics. I don't pretend to be, but of course I care because I spent some of the most wonderful times in my life there. That was really formative for me, living in Berlin. And I have to say, Germany has gone off the deep end. Angela Merkel has gone off the deep end. I used to be such a fan of hers. But her policies on immigration just made no sense. She has pretty much shipwrecked many, many towns and villages in Germany by the uncareful, careless immigration of migrant male Muslim men who just marched across the country and wreaked havoc. And she stood by that. She feels that's the right thing to do. So I just think it's interesting that I saw a story this morning that Angela Merkel was stepping aside, but she had sort of picked a person a couple of years ago to take her place. It was the heir apparent. I can't even pronounce her name, unless I think about it. Annegret Kramp-Karrenbauer. Anyway, Annegret is stepping aside and criticizing Angela for something. I don't know. It's in inter-politics that I don't quite can't comprehend. But she decided not to run suddenly, and it's thrown Angela Merkel's team and her circle in German politics into kind of chaos. But the thing about it is, it looks as though what may happen is that, now this is all, you know, it's politics. Who knows what's going to happen? But at this point, according to Politico, the prospects of the two men Merkel hoped to block from succeeding her, Health Minister Jens Spahn, who's 39, and Friedrich Merz, 64, prominent former MP and longtime Merkel foe, have been rekindled. Both are on the right of the party and haven't shied from criticizing the chancellor for her policies on migration and areas such as social welfare. So, because they feel like she's led them way far to the left. So Angela's in danger of losing her grip on German politics. But I do think that the one thing I want to emphasize is that Germany, honestly, is so post-Christian, they just don't even comprehend anyone who embraces God. At least, look, there are exceptions. I'm just telling you, culturally, the mainstream of culture in Germany is very anti-God and very anti-Christian morality. I remember meeting an old friend of mine that I knew and had such tender, wonderful feelings toward in Germany. I met him for the first time in something like 30 years, a few years ago, and the first thing he did was sort of lash out at me for things he had heard I said about homosexuality, which I had no idea he even knew I was talking about anything like that. But rather than embrace me warmly as a friend, that's what he chose to discuss. Germany is in trouble, but maybe something good on the horizon. But they love Mitt Romney. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The AFA, Marriage, Family, and Life Conference is coming June 25th through the 27th. Experts have lined up to help Christians make a difference in our increasingly wicked culture.
Dr. Alex McFarland.
There was a day when America was thoroughly predisposed to Christianity.
Dr. Michael Brown.
Pro-life consciousness in America is much more of a political and social and cultural and spiritual battle here in America than in other countries.
Bishop E.W. Jackson.
We get so used to seeing this perversion that it becomes normal.
Will and Miki Addison.
Here is a first line defense against sex trafficking, and that would be intact families. That would be fathers being present, showing their daughters healthy affection, defending and protecting them.
The Marriage, Family, and Life Conference at Hope Church in Tupelo, June 25th through the 27th, includes a children's track as well. Learn more and register at marriagefamilylife.net.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today we pray for Sean Manasco, Acting Undersecretary of the United States Air Force. He is the second highest ranking civilian official in the Department of the Air Force and part of the senior leadership team. Philippians 2:3 reminds us of the qualities we look for in our nation's leaders. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Dear Heavenly Father, we ask for guidance for Sean Manasco as he provides leadership to the Department of the Air Force. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Hi, this is Todd Starnes, and folks, Liberty University believes a private Christian education should be affordable to everyone. That's great, right? It doesn't matter if you're from California or Maine or anywhere in between, you may qualify for up to $20,780 over 4 years through Liberty's Middle America Scholarship. For more information, text MAS to the number 839-858 today. Again, that's MAS to the number 839-858. There's no doubt Pastor Robert Grant delivered a stemwinder of a prayer during the opening session of the Virginia House of Delegates, but when his prayer condemned abortion and he defended traditional marriage, well, that was more than Democrats could stomach. Many lawmakers, including some Republicans, walked out of the chamber. One of them shouted, "Is this a prayer or a sermon?" Speaker Eileen Filler Corn, also a Democrat, brought down the gavel as the pastor continued to pray and directed lawmakers to begin reciting the Pledge of Allegiance. One lawmaker said the pastor was disrespectful. Another said it felt like a condemnation. Well, that's because it was. Pastor Grant had every right to call out lawmakers who defended the killing of unborn kids and newly born babies. Infanticide is a crime, a sin against God. And like the pastor said, if you don't want to hear what a preacher has to say, don't invite a preacher. You can watch the pastor's prayer at toddstarnes.com.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
You know what Todd Starnes was just talking about was pretty amazing. I watched it, and the Speaker of the House or whoever was presiding, you know, banged the gavel to shut the pastor up, and it was an amazing moment, and it just was a visual portrait of what we are facing, you know, the turn, the angry turn against not only conservative policies, but particularly Christian principles, morality. It's just amazing, and I'm going to get to more of that in just a second. The Democratic candidates, of course, are coming under more scrutiny because now they're, you know, getting around all of these caucuses and primaries, and they're going to be coming at each other, and we're discovering more about each of them. Jorge Ramos did an interesting interview with Joe Biden, and I think I'm just going to let you listen because, you know, we've been told repeatedly, of course, that President Trump is putting babies in cages. You know, Jennifer Lopez helped us visualize that with her young daughter on stage at the Super Bowl recently. You know, that President Trump was putting babies in cages. Maybe some of you don't know that that's really not true and that actually that happened during the Obama years. But if you don't take my word for it, well, listen to Jorge Ramos. Let's listen.
You said that during the Obama-Biden administration, and I quote,
we didn't lock people in cages. But you actually did. We found a picture of an 8-year-old boy from Honduras.
Yes. And what it was, in
2014. In a detention center in McAllen, Texas.
All the unaccompanied children were coming across the border. We tried to get them out. We kept them safe and get them out of the detention centers that were run by Homeland Security and get them into communities as quickly as we can.
Many people would say they were cages.
You know you're not telling the truth here about the comparison of the two things.
You know you're not telling the truth, Jorge, because you got reason to lie about the Obama administration, who... You actually loved Jorge, so I'm confused. So the thing of it is, the whole notion of children being held in cages, the device they were using was developed and used during the Obama years. Now, whether it was used initially in the Trump years, I honestly don't know that particular part of it. Probably was. But that started in the Obama years, and of course it wasn't a cage. It was a way of keeping the kids safe from all of the other... They were put in these... you know, large areas, and they were trying to protect the children. So it is a thing that's been spun and twisted. But the Obama, the Bidens and the Democrats, of course, want to blame President Trump, but it wasn't him. It was President Obama. And I think that needs to be made clear. All right. Well, Joe Biden's not doing very well in this particular primary. But Michael Bloomberg is on the rise. And that reminds me of an article by George Grassley in Conservative HQ. And I want to share this with you. He talks about how the Democrats, of course, want to be the aw-shucks working class party, which, of course, if you're not, unless you've been, you know, sleeping at the wheel, you must know surely that's not true anymore. However, you might still think so. But I want to read to you what George says. Lunch Bucket Joe, that's what he calls himself, has a network worth, this is Joe Biden, Lunch Bucket Joe has a net worth of about $9 million. Socialist Bernie Sanders is a multimillionaire who owns three very handsome houses. But those millions pale in comparison to the billions of Michael Bloomberg and Tom Steyer, who have been passing this money around very liberally. And I'm going to get into that in just a second. But I want to say something right up front so that you don't misunderstand me. I don't think it's wrong to have a lot of money. If you have worked hard and your hard work and your good management skills, if it's not ill-gotten gain, if you've done it honestly and by the sweat of your brow or by your mind or what, there's nothing wrong with having money. Greed can be found in people who have lots of money, and it can be found in people who have nothing. Envy and greed. It is not about the amount that you have. So I want to make that clear before I go on talking about this. But the Democrats, yes, tout how they're the party of the people or the downtrodden, and we're just trying to help, and we want to share the wealth, and we want to, you know, take the money from the wealthy 1% and distribute it and fill in the blank. But of course, they're very wealthy, these people that are saying this. And case in point, in South Carolina, where of course Joe Biden hoped to pick up a lot of black voters, well, it looks like Tom Steyer is down there sort of scooping things up. He's actually paid $40,000 to Representative Jerry Govan, who's the chairman of the state's legislative black caucus. So another senator, Democratic Senator Dick Harpootlian, basically said, Mr. Moneybags, a.k.a. Tom Steyer, has paid South Carolina State Rep Jerry Govan almost $50,000 for a month's worth of work. Is he pocketing the dough or redistributing the wealth? So that was another Democrat's comments on that. But that's not all. The Associated Press reports that Tom Steyer has also hired another one of South Carolina's most influential black lawmakers as an advisor to his campaign, as the billionaire businessman tries to make inroads in a state where black voters, long assumed to be solidly for former Vice President Joe Biden, will play a dominant role in the February 29th primary. So this is interesting. Associated Press said that the Steyer campaign told them that State Rep. Gilda Cobb-Hunter has signed on as a senior national advisor. Cobb-Hunter is the longest-serving member of the South Carolina House and is the current president of the National Black Caucus of State Legislature. There's a reason why these people are being hired. And then The Intercept reports that Tom Steyer, though, isn't the only one trying to buy or bribe his way into the Oval Office. Now, here's here's the story. Senior advisor to Bernie Sanders, Chuck Rocha, said that the Sanders campaign recently lost a staffer in South Carolina to New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg. "I've heard it in every state we've been in," said Rocha, adding that one staffer recently came to him and said, "Hey, Chuck, I'm with Bernie. I'm going to vote for Bernie, but I'm going to go get this money because he's going to double my salary and pay me till November, and I got to pay my bills when this thing is over." And I was like, "Look, brother, go do what you got to do. Out of respect, we'll still like your vote and ask your mommy and daddy if they'll vote for Bernie as well." He goes, "Okay, no problem." So, and then it goes on to say that, according to The Intercept, progressive groups, local campaigns, presidential operations are losing staff to Bloomberg. He's swallowing them all up. He's spending millions. He plans to spend up to $1 billion of his own money. This is just a quote from one of them. Let's see. Isthmus, which is another outlet, spoke to one recently hired Bloomberg campaign staffer who asked to remain anonymous. "I didn't come into this job as the biggest Bloomberg fan. He's growing on me. I'm not saying I'm not bought and paid for," said the staffer. "He's a billionaire. What he spends on this race, he's not going to miss. I'm a big supporter of his jobs plan for me." Bloomberg is offering $150 a pop to Instagram influencers willing to shill for his campaign. And by comparison, President Trump used $66 million of his own money in his 2016 campaign, which is less than what Michael Bloomberg spent to win his third term as mayor of New York. Bloomberg, right now, has already tripled Donald Trump's 2016 spending with no end in sight. So by the way, Peggy Noonan did an article on Bloomberg talking about how seriously we should take him and how a dangerous or formidable a candidate he is, and she loves him. So we'll see what happens with that. There are a lot of things coming out about Mike Bloomberg, and I could tell you lots of them. Some of them have to do with they have to do with the way he treats people. The Washington Post did a long article on this, and some of it, because I'm not a Washington Post fan, although I don't know, you know, when they're covering Michael Bloomberg, it's not like he's a conservative. He isn't. So you have to take everything they say, you know, in context. But the report is that he has treated his women employees very badly. But it's not like sexual harassment. It's not like that. It's things like this. There was a lawsuit by an employee whose last name is Garrison. She told Bloomberg that she and her husband were having a baby and that Bloomberg told her to, quote, kill it. In a lawsuit Garrison filed against Bloomberg, in which he settled with her, she said the following happened. Basically, they were in a sort of a, I'm not going to read this whole thing. He just basically was talking to her within a group of people. He said, how's married life? You married? And then she said, yeah, she was very happy. And she said she just found out she was pregnant. And he responded to her, kill it. The plaintiff asked Bloomberg to repeat himself. And he said, again, kill it. And then he said, great, number 16. In other words, that was the 16th employee in his company that had just gotten married and pregnant. So then what he did was he called her and told her, basically, as I quoted the call, and I don't have time to read all of this, but he says, come and see me. I didn't even know you were pregnant, and whatever you think I said, I didn't say it. I didn't say it. So that's basically what he's saying. And then she ends up suing him, and he ends up paying her. So that's one of the stories out there. Also, well, there are other things alleged. And I think you have to be careful about this. Because I've seen this do this to really good people, like really fine people that I support, putting words in their mouth. But that one is a lawsuit, and everything is in writing. And so it's very interesting. But we do know this, that Michael Bloomberg was caught on tape talking. I think this was in Britain, but he's talking to a group of farmers. And I just want you to listen to what he says to them. This is clip 10.
I could teach anybody, even people in this room, so no offense intended, to be a farmer. It's a process. You dig a hole, you put a seed in, you put dirt on top, add water, up comes the corn. Then we had 300, you could learn that. Then you have 300 years of the industrial society. You put the piece of metal on the lathe, you turn the crank and the direction of the arrow, and you can have a job. And we created a lot of jobs. The information economy is fundamentally different because it's built around replacing people with technology, and the skill sets that you have to learn are how to think and analyze. And that is a whole degree level different. You have to have a different skill set. You have to have a lot more gray matter.
Okay, so if you're a farmer or a person who works in industry, you don't have to have as much gray matter, so says Bloomberg, as people who work in technology. Now, listen, you know, I was raised in a farming community. So I happen to know a lot of farmers. There was farmland right behind my house. That is so insulting. It's certainly true that, you know, dumb people maybe could farm, but it takes so much intellect to put together and manage farms. It's so many things that Bloomberg has no idea. I think it was Britt Hume who tweeted that Bloomberg must have learned about farming from watching Hee Haw, because it's so much more complicated than that. How insulting and industrial. The way I view the world, just for what it's worth, is that, you know, you can be brilliant and be a person who owns a housekeeping service, but you're able to put details together and match people and run it effectively. Intellect isn't just represented by people who go in technology. That's a special kind of gift and knowledge, but there are lots of different kinds of intelligence. Maybe Bloomberg doesn't know that, but how insulting. And really that comports to other stories I'm hearing about his condescension, how he looks down on people, and it feels very arrogant about who he is. And remember, I read that quote to you last week where he said, if there is a God and I get to heaven, I'm not even going to stop at the gate. Because of what I have done, I've got a ticket. I will get right in. You can take that to the bank. That's what Bloomberg. So that, just all of that, just choosing his own words and not reading what's alleged to be what he said. That's what you have to do when you're trying to figure out the measure of a person, is not listen to all the slanders and the things that are slapped at the wall, but try to find, you know, lots of evidence to kind of build your understanding of who that person is. And I think we're seeing that Mike Bloomberg is an extremely arrogant, pompous person. So, but we're going to find out, you know, if he can actually buy the election. That's what he plans to do. You know, he's not been part of the debates. He doesn't really want to be. He wants to buy the election. That's what he wants to do. I really don't think he can do that. Maybe we'll open the phone. Not going to open the phones today because I have a lot to tell you, but I just don't, personally, I don't think that's going to work out well. Because I don't think he has the charisma and his platforms, you know, like banning soft drinks, banning straws, banning guns for, it's just, and then these things that I think are going to come out or are continually coming out about him are going to be very damaging to him. All right, so yesterday, Chris Wallace had Pete Buttigieg on with him, and I just want to mention this because I want to play a clip from Pete's interview with Chris Wallace, and I have a few things to say about it. But before we do that, Paul Kinger, who's a professor at Grove City, and Paul is an expert on the communist left and the history of it, the history of communism, and he's written an entire expose on Mayor Pete and his past. And I've known since I first heard his name. I heard someone kept bringing his name up that I know, before any of us had ever heard it, before he was a candidate for president. She just kept saying, watch out for this guy, watch out for this guy, and hinting that he had some stuff in his past that the impression that I had was he was being groomed for some sort of big role. And so Paul has sort of written this out in a story for the American Spectator called Mayor Pete, Red Diaper Baby. What does that mean? Red Diaper Baby are a whole group of kids who were raised by communist parents. And Pete is one of them. And so Paul talks about that. I'm not going to go into that part of his bio today. I'm hoping to talk to Paul this week at length about that story. But what I want to talk to you about is when Chris Wallace asked him about his marriage to his partner what effect that might have on the campaign. That's what I want to talk about. So we'll do that. When we come back, you'll hear Pete and Chris Wallace talking, and then I'll give you my thoughts about that. Then lots of other things, so stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Therefore, a man shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. With this statement, Jesus affirmed what he'd already said in Genesis 1 and 2, and defined marriage for all time. Contrary to the protestations of the nouveau critical theorists, the nuclear family consisting of a married father and mother is not a Western sociological prescription or construct. Marriage did not originate in the West. Its origin isn't suburban America. It started in Genesis, in the Garden of Eden. Marriage is God's idea. Therefore, he alone defines it. If you don't like it, your problem is with God, not me.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Chick-fil-A founder Truett Cathy once said, "You can tell if a person needs encouragement. Just check to see if they're breathing." Hello, I'm Don Hawkins, here to tell you about Encouragement Today, a half hour of strong weekend radio encouragement packed with fascinating guests, plus practical biblical insights to help you face life's challenges. Plan to join us for Encouragement Today, Saturdays at 8.05 p.m. Central Time, here on American Family Radio.
Target is in the bullseye because of its transgender bathroom policy.
A petition by the American Family Association to boycott Target now surpassing 1 million signatures and counting.
People have their own beliefs and stuff, but what can it hurt? What can it hurt? What can it hurt?
It hurts our daughters.
It hurts you.
It hurts our families.
It hurts me.
It hurts all of us.
Sign the petition to boycott Target at AFA.net.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. We all want to keep our teens out of trouble. A 2018 longitudinal study from Germany points the way. This study found that adolescents who lived in always intact nuclear families from the beginning of the study to the end had the best health-rated quality of life, the healthiest self-esteem, and the lowest percentage of participation in unhealthy behaviors like cigarette smoking. Dads, the best thing you can do for your adolescent children is love your wife. I've written the Boy to Man book to give fathers of 12-year-old boys a user-friendly tool to help their sons prepare for manhood. If you know and love the father of a 12-year-old boy, you might want to think about giving this little book to him as a gift. You can order your copy of the Boy to Man book today at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Communist China has been waging unrestricted warfare against this country for decades. One of its most devastating lines of attack in that war has been the hollowing out of America's industrial base. A stupefying case in point is the Chinese Communist Party's success in destroying our nation's capacity to manufacture prescription drugs, to the point where we are virtually completely dependent on China for our medicines. A recent poll of likely voters found that 83% were concerned about such a dependency. 76% worried that China may cut off the supply, devastating our healthcare system and people. Rosemary Gibson, the co-author of China RX, has warned about such a scenario for years. Now, in the midst of the coronavirus crisis, it is upon us. We need immediately to heed Ms. Gibson's call urgently to reconstitute an America First drug manufacturing capability. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
This week, two conservative supporters of President Trump, Rush Limbaugh and Sebastian Gorka, talked about it on their shows. Take a look.
A gay guy, 37 years old, loves kissing his husband on debate stages. Can you see Trump have fun with that?
Why is a homosexual man lecturing us about the sanctity of life in the womb? Just a little curious there. Strange.
Mayor, what's your reaction to those comments?
Well, I am in a faithful, loving, committed marriage. I'm proud of my marriage, and I'm proud of my husband. And I'm not going to be lectured on family values from the likes of Rush Limbaugh or anybody who supports Donald J. Trump as the moral as well as political leader of the United States. America has moved on, and we should have a politics of belonging that welcomes everybody. That's what the American people are for. And I am saddened for what the Republican Party has become if they embrace that kind of homophobic rhetoric.
And how big an issue do you think this would be in a general election? Clearly, they think it would be an issue. The idea that you would need, and you have reached out to social conservatives, many of whose votes you'd need, but who might have concerns about your sexual orientation.
Well, here's my generational or general election experience on this. I came out during a general election in South Bend. And this was at a time when Mike Pence was the governor of Indiana, and we didn't know what would happen. I'll tell you what happened. I got reelected with 80% of the vote in my generally Democratic but socially conservative community, more than I had the first time that I ran for office. This election isn't about any of us candidates. It is about voters' lives. And we're the ones trying to get voters a raise. We're the ones trying to make sure that there is paid family leave, working to end endless war, serious about climate change, actually prepared to do something on gun violence. And when it comes to LGBTQ issues, this is, I think, the most important thing is not the treatment of candidates. It's what's happening to individuals and families across the country from brave service members who have their careers threatened by this president to kids experiencing bullying right now in this climate. We can do better, and you don't have to be a diehard Democrat to know that we can do better when it comes to inclusion and equality in this country.
All right, I'll go on record again as telling you that I think Pete Buttigieg is the most dangerous candidate if he should get the nomination to run against President Trump. I believe that because I think he's very slick. I think his words are very persuasive, even if you don't catch the nuance of everything, and you probably, most of us won't, because he says, I'm from Indiana, and I'm in a faithful, loving, committed marriage, and I'm proud of my marriage, and I'm proud of my husband. And the Bible says, you know, and on he goes. And we'll talk more about him at greater depth, as I said, as we unpack kind of his training and background. But I want to talk about what he said a little bit for a second. I don't know if he's electable or not. You know, I don't have confidence that he would not get elected based on his kissing his husband on his on the stage when he, you know, was at campaign rallies. America has changed so much, I don't recognize it, and I really don't know how that would work out. I really don't know. You know, I know how I feel about it. I know how other people that are close to me feel about it, but I don't know. America's not the same country that it once was. But I want to just address what he said. He says, in response to Chris, and I'm not going to be lectured on family values from the likes of Rush Limbaugh or anyone who supports Donald J. Trump as the moral as well as political leader of the United States. Now, let me just say that probably no one has ever lectured him on this issue. I doubt in his lifetime he's been lectured about this issue. And certainly Rush Limbaugh was not lecturing him. He was saying he didn't think he was electable because of his appearance on the stage kissing his husband. But he didn't lecture him. And maybe he needs to have, you know, actually be lectured. Maybe there needs to be pushback, a sorting out of his thinking, and certainly correcting him on what the scripture actually says about it, because there is no doubt that this is an abomination to God. It's just not in question. It's not subtle. It's not just one verse. It is the whole foundation of God's creation is male and female. And the fact that the two shall become one flesh, they complete each other physically, spiritually, mentally. It's not meant to be two men. Just isn't. Sorry, Pete. Mayor Pete, I am lecturing. I'm teaching you because you're confused about that. I think intentionally confusing other people. Then the second part of that, I'm not going to be lectured by anyone who supports Donald J. Trump as the moral as well as political leader of the United States. I want to talk about that because that means that none of us that support President Trump can criticize this kind of lifestyle or behavior that Mayor Pete is bragging about and boasting about. And he's so proud of his husband and kisses him on the stage in front of children and families. And he's proud of that. So this is what I would say about that. You know, it's not the same thing. Why do I say that? Isn't that the same thing? President Trump has committed adultery. He's had three marriages. He's got children from different women. We have that TMZ, I think it was TMZ, video that he didn't know it was being recorded where he said some really vulgar things about women. So, yeah, isn't he right about that? I mean, if we embrace President Trump, isn't that embracing and endorsing immorality or the things that he's done. I would just say that there's a difference, because President Trump, all of that stuff is true about him in the past. I kind of don't think it's true about him in the right now. How do I know? But he seems to love his wife now, and Melania, for all of her really sordid past, seems to have changed and morphed into a beautiful, loving mom. And I do believe God can change people. I know I've been changed. So that's why I don't hold that stuff in his past against him. But I would also say that President Trump is not coming out on stage bragging about his adulteries and encouraging the whole world that the Bible actually says adultery is just great. It's fine. According to the Bible, there were multiple marriages. And neither does President Trump bring out one of his former lovers, or current if he had one, and kiss them and say, I'm proud of my adulterous relationship and this is my partner. And the Bible says it's okay. President Trump is not doing that. So there's a distinction between having sinned, which is something we have all done, but not touting sin and mainstreaming sin and being proud of sin on a stage in front of American people and children. And it's just very different. Mayor Pete is proudly endorsing perversity, detestable behavior, according to the scriptures. President Trump is not doing that. And so that's why I don't feel badly at all about, you know, I think President Trump probably agrees morally that he should never have done those things. So it's not about him anyway. It's about God. And I can tell you God is not down with that, Pete, Mayor Pete. So that's just the point I wanted to make for all of you. And so we'll talk about him again, I hope, hopefully this week, at least sometime in the next few weeks before the next primary or election, just so you'll know a little bit more about his past and his being this red diaper baby, well-groomed for what he's doing right now. All right, this is a huge story, and I guess I want to tell it this way. Last week, we talked about Roger Stone being sentenced to 7 to 9 years for lying under oath and for allegedly threatening a juror. Remember, he told the potential juror, who was a radio talk show host, that he was going to get rid of his dog, but the talk show host in question said to the agents, I didn't feel threatened by Roger, nor did I feel my dog was threatened. It was a statement that Roger made, but they took that to mean that he was threatening a potential witness, and so they threw the book at him and asked for 9 years. And the two top investigators on that crime were part of the Mueller team, and the other two, I've forgotten in this moment, their Democratic leftist credentials, but they had them, the team that was prosecuting Roger Stone out of the Justice Department. So four of them resigned in a fanfare last week when William Barr, the attorney general, not him personally, but the Justice Department announced that they were recommending a lesser sentence because that was just way over the top for what Roger Stone had been charged with. And so the prosecutors, the four, resigned with a fanfare. And then President Trump tweeted that night that he was outraged that his former colleague, maybe they've known each other for years. I don't really know what their relationship is, but Roger Stone is certainly a friend of his in whatever use of that term it means. And he was outraged that he was going to get 9 years. So the president tweeted about it. He was quite angry. The next day, the Justice Department came out and said that they were going to recommend a lesser sentence. So the left jumped in and was blaming Bill Barr for coordinating, colluding, I guess it was, with President Trump. I actually think I should let Mark Meredith tell the story because he'll tell it more clearly. This is clip three.
The White House says the president still has confidence and faith in his attorney general, even as multiple congressional Democrats are calling for Bill Barr to resign amid multiple controversies facing his department.
I'm not going to be bullied or influenced by anybody.
Attorney General Bill Barr is raising eyebrows for selecting an outside prosecutor to review the case against former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. In 2017, Flynn pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI, recently asked to withdraw that plea, and is still awaiting sentencing. Meantime, the Justice Department says it's no longer pursuing a case against former FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe.
It is an absolute disgrace that they took 2 years before they finally drew the obvious conclusion.
President Trump repeatedly criticized McCabe over his role in the Russia probe and tweeted Saturday that McCabe, quote, authorized media leaks to advance personal interests. Last week, the president praised the Justice Department for changing the way it's handling the case against former Trump associate Roger Stone. Stone was convicted in November on multiple counts of lying to Congress. Prosecutors planned to ask for a 7 to 9 year sentence, but senior justice officials overruled their recommendation and planned to push for a shorter sentence.
I have not discussed the Roger Stone case at the White House.
Democrats don't buy it and are calling for Barr to step down.
Everything that Bill Barr
all right,
is
I'm
about
going to
right
interrupt
now.
Because I want to say a lot. Yes, so they're calling for Bill Barr to step down. Bill Barr did a long interview because they're accusing him of working with the White House to come after President to lessen the sentences and the punishment against President Trump's friends and come down with harsher sentences against his enemies. You know, this is just such a lie. Andrew McCabe was the Justice Department just announced they're not prosecuting him at all. He lied. He lied countless times under oath. And he's being let off scot-free. And by the way, that Jesse Liu that the president withdrew the nomination for last week, she was over that case. And so they're howling about Jesse Liu being the nomination being withdrawn. They're howling about the fact that they are accusing President Trump of colluding, or whatever word they're using, with Bill Barr about lessening the sentence on Roger Stone. When Roger Stone was treated like a criminal, which he is not. He has no record of anything. He's not a perfect man. I'm sure he's not. He's a dandy. He's kind of an odd character. But he's not a criminal that should be arrested in the dark of night with the FBI pounding on your door shouting. And he should not have received the treatment that he did. By the way, now, so the Justice Department, the leadership of the Justice Department saw, according to Bill Barr and the president, there was no conversation. I think that's why the president tweets. He can't even talk to his own attorney general because the jackals in Washington and the media and in the various Democratic positions are guarding. And there's so many people leaking, telling inside information. He should be able to talk to his attorney general about this stuff, but he can't even do that. And I think that's one of the reasons he tweets. But according to them, they did not coordinate anything, that it was already in the works. And Bill Barr and the leadership team had interjected and interceded and said, that's ridiculous. A sentence of 7 to 9 years is ridiculous. And so Bill Barr now is under attack. More than 1,100 former Department of Justice officials are calling for him to resign. But the worst part about this is they are now sending a message to other employees. Remember, the Justice Department is filled, I think it's about 1,000 employees, and there's probably only maybe 20, I'm guessing at most, who are friendly to the president. Now, what do I know? But I'm telling you, there are hardly any. So they say in their letter, be prepared to report future abuses to the Inspector General, the Office of Professional Responsibility in Congress. They're talking to employees now. To refuse to carry out directives that are inconsistent with their oaths of office, to withdraw from cases that involve such directives or other misconduct. In other words, continue to be insubordinate, to report. And so now they're after William Barr to try to get him to come pull down because he's doing some things that are very, very good. Now, Bill Barr is asking basically the president to stop tweeting that it's undermining his authority. And now we know that the lead juror in the Roger Stone case, I told you about her last week, she completely lied in her interview. She was a Democratic operative all along. She was the foreman of the jury. She was a Democratic candidate, and she had tweeted terrible things about the president, about the Russian collusion thing, and she lied about all of that. So I don't know what's going to happen. I know that Roger Stone is asking for a retrial. I don't know if he's going to get it. Meanwhile, Andrew McCabe walks free. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.